Shabbat Shalom. Since the moment I landed in Israel with members of our community on March 22nd, I have been asked the question, how was your trip? More times than I can count. Oy, how do you answer that question? It's not a quick answer, nor is it something that rolls off the tongue easily. In the best of times, Israel is a complicated place. But in this unprecedented, historic moment, everything in Israel is a spider web of gray threads of complexity. Every adjective and emotion would be appropriate to describe the whirlwind of a week we had. How can I explain it all to you? I cannot. Nor do I want to recount from this pulpit the powerful, terrifying, heart-wrenching stories we heard. I don't need to tell you what the various experts shared with us. You can simply read their articles or books and listen to their podcasts, and their words will forever be more powerful than mine. So how can I possibly give you a little taste of what I heard, saw, and felt? I can share with you what I'm processing with a framework that I initially learned from my professor, Michael Zeldin, and that I shared with and adjusted for the group in Israel. I notice, I appreciate, I wonder, I struggle with, and my remaining question. First, I notice. I notice that Ben Gurion Airport and the Tel Aviv beach seem quieter than usual. The vibrancy of life in Tel Aviv feels just a little bit off. There is an eerie quiet all around me that you might not notice if it was your first time here. Israelis are not a subdued people, but the colors of the Israeli sunset feel just slightly muted. If you didn't know any better, you might assume that it's normal for people in Tel Aviv to be home at 10 o'clock at night on a Saturday, or that airport lines are just so efficient, they're always short. I know better. I know that every restaurant in this urban center of cool should be packed with people long after the sun goes down. I know that there should be an appropriate amount of pushing and shoving in the line to get pita in Jaffa. I know that there should be enough noise from traffic and talking to remind me of New York. I know that life here in Israel looks almost normal. But truly, it is not. I notice that there is a sadness and a rawness in the air. People are a little more on edge and without much emotional guard. The hostage pictures and signs remind me that there is an open, unprotected nerve ever present, pulsing through every Israeli with each heartbeat. That rawness also means that hugs with old friends are tighter and linger longer. These hugs bring me tremendous comfort, finally able to hold my loved ones and know that they are physically still there and safe. I notice that for a moment, these hugs can calm the open nerve, soothe the rawness, temper the sadness, and quiet the rage that is ever present. But do these hugs help me? And what will they do for the person I am hugging? Second, I appreciate. I appreciate the honesty of everyone we met. Scholars, journalists, politicians, and everyday Israelis share their experiences, their wisdoms, their dreams, their fears without any hesitation or caution. Their blunt language, their clarity of vision, their drive to ensure Israel's safety and the individual Israeli's security are comforting when there is so much confusion in the world. Karin, Avichai, Reut, Or, Einat, Gilad, Rami, each tell us their story, their truth, and expose us to a world of heroism, resiliency, and civil action that feels like something out of a storybook. This was not what I was expecting to find. It is both confusing and uplifting. I appreciate finding and feeling optimism, even during a depressing war. Journalist Haviv Retegor told us that in a post-October 7th study, it was found that optimism is up in Israel, because Israelis have come together in new ways and have recommitted to Zionism. Optimism is up because, as Haviv told us, Israelis have been reminded of their unity. We have all been reminded of what is important, our people and our land. And when we commit to these things, nothing can stop the Jewish people. Third, I wonder why everyone thanks us for being here. Israeli men who fight terrorists away from burning homes are profoundly grateful that I have taken a plane ride across an ocean. My friend calls me a hero for coming to Israel in these times. What did I do that was so heroic? Is Israel really so alone in this moment that seeing the face of an ally is a miracle? Did Israelis really not understand that while we haven't always been vocal enough about our love for Israel, American Jews are deeply connected to the Zionist dream? Have we been so absent from Israel that our brothers and sisters could not have imagined that we would show up during a family emergency? I wonder how my trip and others like it will repair the rift that has grown over the past few years between Israel and the American Jewish community. I wonder how I can be a hero for getting on a plane when the true heroes stand in front of us, like Eliyah, the soldier who was wounded in Gaza, who has undergone multiple surgeries, but weekly he goes back to visit his squad, ensuring that the fight continues and morale stays high. This astounding young man told us that he is ready to go back to fighting this war and will head to the Northern Front without question when it is time. I wonder where he draws his heroism, his bravery, his courage from, and if I, a comfortable American Jew, can ever truly grasp this kind of patriotism. I wonder how rage turns into exceptionalism. How do individuals experiencing trauma and fear turn that into something that truly changes the world? How do you help others when you don't even know how to help yourself? Miri Eisen reminded us that war makes change. But maybe that's merely because all trauma has the potential to shift the earth around us. Whether big or small, we have already seen Israelis do amazing things while the world around them is being bombarded with bombs. More will come, and we will continue to be sadly awe-inspired. Fourth, I struggle with the world forgetting October 7th and that Hamas is truly evil. The UN might mandate a ceasefire, but it seems to only apply to Israel. Where is the reminder that Israel didn't want this war, that Israel did not attack first, and that there are still 134 Israelis held in captivity? I agree, war is horrific. But I struggle with those who think that Israel can simply walk away. We stood a little more than a mile from the Gaza border and watched the first rockets in weeks fly towards Ashdod. As we heard about terrorists killing parents in front of their children, we shook from the thunder of the Iron Dome exploding those same rockets before they could harm more families. International hand-wringing and outrage against Israel appears to have no boundaries. But who is telling Hamas to put down their arms, to return the hostages, to never attack Israel again? I struggle with how to maintain humanity, even in the face of what some would call a just war or a war of no choice. War comes with death, with destruction, with hard choices. Yet even as we fight for the life of Israel, we have to remember that all life is sacred. How do we fight to save our lives and future, knowing that some innocent lives will be taken along the way? I have lived much of my life claiming to be a pacifist, desperately wanting to believe that there is and always has to be another way other than war. That seems naive now. Pacifism feels like the easy way out. The harder path is the one that Israel and the Jewish people are now on, to be human in the face of inhumanity. We must destroy those that seek our destruction, but we cannot do so with blind, indiscriminate rage. I struggle with the fact that we are fighting another war here in the diaspora. I walked into multiple Israeli synagogues, never once going through a metal detector or having my bag searched. I wore my Jewish star around my neck and a hostage pin every day, feeling proud and normal, never even thinking about who would see, how they would react, or what they might do. I struggle with the fight against anti-Semitism all around us. What does it mean that I felt safer in Israel, mere miles from two battlefronts, than I do riding the subway each day to work here in New York City? What do we need to do to ensure we are safe here in America? How do we inspire Jewish pride when we are heckled, mocked, chased? We have been secure for too long, trusting that anti-Semitism can't really harm us in America, in New York City, on the Upper West Side. But we have work to do to ensure that the evil virus of anti-Semitism is eradicated from our streets, our schools, our campuses, and our cultural milieu. Lastly, my remaining question. After all of this, I have only one question. When can I get back on a plane and go back to the place that my heart holds dear? How soon can I once again walk the beach and smell the Mediterranean sea air, see the vibrant colors of the shuk, feel the cool Jerusalem stone under my hand, hear spirited conversations in Hebrew, and eat the best falafel and hummus in a pita? The only question that I have left after this trip is, when am I going back, and will you join me? Israel needs us. We need it. Menachem Begin once said, "I am not a Jew with trembling knees. I am a proud Jew with 3,700 years of civilized history. Nobody came to our aid when we were dying in gas chambers and ovens. Nobody came to our aid when we were striving to create our country." Mr. Begin, you're mostly right. We are not Jews with trembling knees. However, while the rest of the world might not come to our aid, we, the Jews of the diaspora, can help to fight, to grieve, to grow, and to rebuild an Israel, a Jewish democratic state that is even more spectacular than the one we almost lost 6 months ago. Ken Yehi Ratzon.